I'm Sean Cheatham, the Chief Relationship Officer at Hays, and welcome to How Did You Get That Job? A podcast which explores the secrets behind career success in the tech industry. In this episode, we meet Emily Cornock. Emily joins me from Melbourne, Australia, where she works as the Executive Manager for Core Data Platforms and Technology at Suncorp Group, a finance, insurance, and banking corporation. In today's show, Emily and I will be discussing how authenticity has helped her in her career, how she got into leadership, and her thoughts on diversity in engineering and tech in general. I hope you enjoy it. So let's get into it. So Emily, welcome to the show. Great to have you on.
Thanks for having me, Sean. It's very exciting.
Yeah, no, really excited to have you here. So let's just start out with a simple question. I mean, when did you decide that you wanted to work in tech? Maybe not so simple, but we'll see.
I have loved technology from a very young age. I actually started building websites when I was still in primary school. My parents were, I think, probably early age hipsters. They had a very cool iMac G3, one of the big bubble iMacs that
I love those.
And I was building websites on them from the time that I was nine. They were both primary school teachers, and so I think they were a little bit ahead of their time when it came to cool technology stuff. So they just encouraged me to play around. They enrolled me in school holiday programs where I learned how to build websites and write code from a very young age. And I just really enjoyed playing around with technology. So I continued to study it through high school. And by the time it came to university, it was almost a foregone conclusion that I would enroll in a technology degree. And here I am, a lot of years later.
Do you still have that Mac? That thing probably worth some money these days.
We do actually. Okay. So ironically, all of the kids these days are now turning those Macs into aquariums. And so it sits in my mum's garage. And I think my brother wants to turn it into an aquarium and still hasn't. So it might be reaching the end of its life.
Yeah, that would be very cool. So you are at Suncorp Group now as the Core Data Platforms and Technology Executive Manager. So tell me, I mean, how did you get that job?
Yeah, I am. So I've been at Suncorp for nearly 7 years now, and I joined as a delivery manager for their technology enablement team, which was really a team back in the day that focused on, as the name implies, enabling all of the technology for the data platform. We were starting to move into the cloud and starting to enable a lot of the new platforms that now form part of the modern technology data stack that many people are familiar with. So I joined and led a small team at the time of engineers, and still thankfully was in a role where I could get my hands dirty and write some code and spin up some cloud computing along the way. And then my role has effectively evolved from there. I was the delivery manager, but when my leader left the organization, I was given the opportunity to step into the platform manager role. So not just leading the delivery, but actually leading the platform and taking on more responsibility there. And I was very, very lucky as a platform manager at Suncorp that I had an absolutely fabulous leader who really encouraged me to kind of spread my wings and take on as much opportunity as I wanted to. And effectively, yeah, gave me a great opportunity to try more. So I ended up continuing to do what I was doing in managing the engineering team, but that cohort grew from about 5 people when I first joined Suncorp to about 180 people along the way. And I also started managing the programs and all of the change portfolio for the data worlds, which was quite big given we were effectively moving everything that we had on-premise into the cloud. So a huge amount of engineering and migration work, and just took more and more responsibility on until it kind of got to the stage where my old leader and I joke, I staged a bit of a coup and I took a lot of his responsibilities, and they created a role for me to step up into and to actually take on the executive leadership of the platforms and the programs that I was looking after, because it's effectively what I ended up evolving into doing underneath his leadership. So they created an executive manager role for me, and I stepped into that, and I've been doing that for another 2 years now. And I love it. I get to play around with all of the cool new shiny technology and strategy and still lead engineering teams and all of that. So it's an ideal role for me.
I was going to ask you if you, as being a Cody that you said you are, if you still get to play with all the toys. So it sounds like you do.
Still do, definitely nowhere near as much as I used to. But as my team like to say, enough to be dangerous, which is ultimately pretty cool. Okay. Still.
It's just the dangerous is good dangerous or bad dangerous, right? So
good dangerous for me, bad dangerous for my yeah, team.
Exactly. Well, so tell me in your role, I mean, what does success look like?
It's a good question. I think success for me probably boils down to three things. Do I still have the opportunity to solve problems and create solutions through technology, which, as we've discussed, I've loved doing since I was 10 years old? Do I get to continually challenge myself and grow? I am somebody who doesn't really like the status quo very much, and I don't like kind of just sitting back and doing the same thing day in, day out. I am constantly looking for opportunities to kind of grow and learn and expand. And then I think really importantly, am I getting to work with the people that I want to work with and having fun with those people along the way? So those three things to me are really, really important. If I wake up every day and I know that I'm getting those three things, I ultimately feel like I'm being successful in what I'm doing. And hopefully that then reflects in how I do my job.
Yeah, no, I love that answer. Yeah. And obviously, I mean, you were exposed to technology at a very early age. I mean, what type of advice would you give to someone who's looking for a career in engineering?
Just do it. I think don't get turned off by that really age-old stereotype where engineers are sitting in a dark room eating pizza slid underneath the door. Engineering, no, well, some of them are. I think some of them would much prefer to be, sure. But we drag them out into the light these days. But for me, at its heart, engineering is about creativity and problem solving. And it is really about creating magic. If you can't tell, I've got a lot of Harry Potter Lego behind me, so I quite like magic. But for me, engineering is magic. You're creating something ultimately out of nothing, zeros and ones, binary code. And that excites me. And I think the more people that we have doing engineering and the different perspectives and backgrounds and thoughts and creativity and all of that that come into engineering, the better. So start small. There's lots of opportunities just to write some code and see what you can do with it.
Yeah, no, that's great. Love that. Just a quick word for our listeners. If you're looking for more advice on finding a job in tech, I highly recommend that you check out the Hayes blog. Follow the link in the show notes to head to our website, where you will find a wide range of helpful content. So Emily, when we first met, you spoke about the importance of being authentic. Tell the audience, you know, how that's helped you in your career, and maybe start with just kind of explaining what you mean by that.
Yeah, I think authenticity is one of the core tenets of my career and life in general. And it really just means showing up and being who you are. Nothing on top of that, no pretense or anything like that. So when I first started my career in corporate IT, and I've generally only really worked in corporate IT, it very much felt like there were set expectations in how to be, how to act, how to present yourself at work to really conform with everybody that was around you. You wore the black suit, you spoke a certain way, and you very much had to fit into that sort of world. And for me, it felt very much like there was a work M and there was a home M, and maintaining those two sides is inherently just exhausting and felt really disingenuous, and I really didn't like it. And I ultimately came to the decision that it was going to be a what you see is what you get. If you don't like it, you can leave it. But I was just going to be myself. And I decided very, very early on in my career that I was going to be as authentic as possible at work. And then I think everybody went through the COVID-19 pandemic, and this really set a new bar and standard for authenticity across the world. I am a mum of two. I've got a nearly 10-year-old daughter, Maggie, and a nearly 7-year-old son, Harry. But when the COVID-19 pandemic took off, I was juggling both work and mum life at home, stuck in my house in Melbourne. And for those of you who don't know, Melbourne had the most number of lockdown days in the whole wide world. And so that kind of boundary between home and life really got torn away. And at the same time, my son, who was then two, decided that he did not want to wear pants. And I can tell you there is nothing that strips away boundaries than having your two-year-old son run butt naked through a Zoom call with your boss's boss. It really just, you know, all pretense is gone. People see who you are as a person and as a leader. And I think that really kind of any pretense that I had left was completely gone. People saw my family, you know, people saw everything during the pandemic. So I think it was a great refresher for everybody who potentially was still managing the two sides of their home and work life. But for me, it was very much kind of a, this is what we need to do. We need to be ourselves. And I think it does make a really material difference to who you are as a leader. And it's played a huge part in my career. So in my view, authenticity creates trust. And trust is really important when you spend so much time with the people that you work with. And it creates trust for the people that you lead, and it creates trust for the people that lead you as well. And for my team, I think that trust means that my team know that they can come to me before things blow up and before things get too hairy, and they know that I'm going to be there to support them, to have their back, to help them work through the problems. And I think for my leaders, it really means that they have the confidence to give me the opportunities and to allow me to be really autonomous in my role. And at least in my platform manager role before I became executive manager, that's a very real reason that my previous leader, who was excellent, trusted me to continue to take on more opportunities and stretch my wings, because he knew who I was as a leader, and he trusted that I would do the right thing.
Yeah, it's so important. I mean, it's the being your true self as opposed to trying to manipulate people to do what you want and so forth. So I definitely can relate to that. So and hopefully your son doesn't walk out without pants on now. Hopefully he's got to that stage. So that might be an interesting view for our audience.
Thankfully, so. Okay. He's also not here. I wasn't going to risk that one.
Okay. You didn't trust that one. Okay, I get it. So now, have you created a career plan for yourself that you kind of stuck to in order to kind of get to where you are today? I mean, tell me about that.
Yeah, so we spoke about this before the show. I am a very stereotypical type A who absolutely loves the plan. The spreadsheets that I create for my holidays are a thing of legend. I keep all of them. They're very meticulously planned. I love a plan. So when I came out of university with my IT degree, I had a very clear plan in mind. And that plan was I was going to be a project manager in 5 years. For some reason, that really appealed to me. It's the type A in me. I love a plan. It was nice and tidy. Everything fits into a nice box. It's like a game of Tetris. You just squeeze everything in and Bob's your uncle, you've got there. And I had a very clear view in how I was going to execute on it. So my view was, to become a good project manager, I first needed to experience all of the little roles that kind of form a project at the end of the day. So I was lucky when I was at university, I did a couple of internships. One was very much focused on testing, and another one was focused on more engineering configuration management of platforms. And so I had experience there. And I focused the next 5 years on getting exposure across other roles like business analysis, change management, release management, a lot more engineering. I did another couple of years of engineering along the way as well. I also did security along the way. And let me tell you, I got out of there as quickly as possible because it's nothing like it is on the movies. Security just ended up being a lot of policies, which don't really get me out of bed in the morning. But I did my stint in security. And almost to the day, 5 years after I left uni, I finished my plan. I became a project manager and I joined another company to do that role. And it was great. I'd got there. I'd executed on my plan, tick, only to discover that I absolutely hated it. It wasn't for me. It took me way too far away from the actual engineering, managing Gantt charts and budgets and the kind of more administrative paperwork side of projects. Didn't excite me at all. It was too far removed from, you know, that spark of magic and creativity that I really enjoyed from engineering. And so I did that for a couple of years, enough to really, really know that it wasn't for me. And then I stepped back into an engineering role. So kind of did engineering again for a couple of years, then stepped back into engineering leadership and grew from there. But I think the thing that that taught me is, despite being very, very type A and loving a plan, plans don't necessarily resonate to me when it comes to my career. There is no such thing as a linear plan, I think, in technology these days anyway. Some of the skills that I learned at university are completely irrelevant because that technology doesn't exist anymore. And it's something that we all have to be really conscious of when it comes to our careers now. Having that really set plan, that job might not exist in the future, that technology might not exist in the future. So for me, instead of having a really linear plan with fixed steps that I had coming out of university, there are things that I consider important, and we touched on them before. Am I excited? Do I get opportunities to grow? Am I working with the people that I want to work with? And for me, those things provide almost a compass rather than a plan. It's a direction. As long as I'm being guided by that compass and I'm happy, then ultimately I'm executing on a plan in a way, and I'm making sure that I'm successful and happy in what I'm doing.
Yeah. And it, certainly in tech right now, everything changes so rapidly. Is there something that you do? I mean, I know you use that as your compass, but is there something that, from an advice standpoint, you could give people on how to keep yourself up to date with what's going on and you know, the world of tech and how it changes so rapidly?
Yeah, I think it's something you need to make time for all of the time and not kind of sit back on your heels and say, oh, I'll just keep up, you know, by osmosis almost at the end of the day. So I spend a lot of my time listening to podcasts, ironically, and I listen to all sorts of podcasts around data platforms, podcasts about leadership, podcasts about DevOps. And for me, I do that while I'm out walking or running every day. I get to fold time and I get to do some exercise physically and while also still working out the kind of mind and learning and all of that. And then I also try and still spend a lot of time, much probably to the chagrin of my team, sitting next to them and learning what they're doing and actually getting some exposure into how they're building things now, what has changed in technology. So I'm actually, again, enough to be dangerous. I know enough to then represent what they're doing back into engineering meetings and strategy meetings and things like that, and to ensure that I'm leading them the right way. It's just something that you have to do in technology, I think. Even if you have a look at Gen AI, right?
Oh,
18
yeah.
months ago, that wasn't really something that people were thinking about or considering. And now you can't walk 3 feet without hearing somebody talk about Gen AI. So it's a constant challenge for IT professionals.
Sure. Yeah. If you need any podcast recommendations, I know a really good one.
Nice to know.
So tell me, I mean, how did you know that you wanted to be a leader? What were the steps that it took to get you there?
It's a good question. Mostly it comes down to, I think I can do it better than the people around me, which is probably quite a blunt thing to say, but
not a confidence problem. I can see.
Not a confidence problem. Probably too much the other way around. No, it really came down to, I think, quite early on in my career, I did have some leaders who didn't come from an engineering background, were very much people leaders or managers. And I saw very, very early on the consequences that that had to the teams that they were leading. There's always that gap where people who are leading engineers, not from an engineering background, things just genuinely didn't gel, or at least in my experience, they didn't gel. The engineering team didn't really feel engaged because they didn't feel like they were being listened to or anything like that. And where I started very, very early on, it was very much people were promoted for management skills rather than engineering skills. And that really rubbed me up the wrong way. So I wanted to really kind of step out there and prove that you could be an engineer and you could come from a very technical background, but that didn't preclude you from being a good manager and a good leader. And so ultimately that was why I stepped into it, probably from a position of, oh, I'll show you that we can do it, and a bit of stubbornness. But since being in that role, it is something that I genuinely, truly love, is leading people and creating opportunities for people and mentoring and coaching them and growing them along the way. I think there's, for me, because I've come from that background, a lot of pride I get in actually growing the engineers that come underneath me and growing them also into leaders and kind of starting to change the line when it comes to who can be a leader, who can't be a leader when it comes to engineering.
Yeah. And tell me, what's it like to be a female leader in engineering?
Good question. I have spent...
Loaded question, I
think. Loaded question. Always a loaded question. I've spent a significant portion of my career as the only woman at the table, or the only woman from a technical engineering background at the table. And again, like we touched on just then, it's that lack of diversity is something that actually has motivated me along the way. And whenever I've faced doubt or skepticism, be it because I'm an engineering leader or be it because I'm a female engineering leader, it's really just fueled me to knock down any doors that stood in my way and to actually step into engineering and show people that I could do it. And one thing I'm very conscious of, and I think a lot of female engineering leaders are, is people that are underrepresented in STEM, females and people from other diverse backgrounds, we're often the ones who have to advocate for the change. And for me, it's all well and good that I've been able to work and create the opportunities, some of them just because I'm stubborn and created them for myself, some of them because I've had amazing leaders who have helped create the opportunities for me. Ultimately, I need to also make sure that I'm creating the opportunities for the women that come after me. And so I know that part of my job as a leader is to be a role model for the younger generation that we have coming through. And I'm very, very lucky where I work. We've got a great cohort of interns and graduates, and we've very, very deliberately made sure that we've picked some women to come into our engineering cohort, which was very, very male dominated. And they have come in and they've just brought just fresh perspective, different ways of looking at things, different ways of solving problems, and a really fresh sense of creativity. And I make sure that I rock up every single day and I'm the role model that I think I never really had as an engineering leader, but show them that you can be an engineering leader, you can be a woman, and you can be successful at the end of the day. And it's ultimately my job to keep the doors open. Any door that I've knocked open, I need to keep that door open and make sure that those girls can also come through it after me as well.
Yeah, so good. So good. And I'm just curious, how did you develop your leadership style? And then kind of in addition to that, how has being a woman in tech shaped your leadership style?
I've learned a lot from the leaders and mentors around me. I think it's a really important thing to be a sponge when you're around good leaders. And where somebody's leadership style and traits have resonated with me, it's something that I've tried to work into my own leadership style. I think a lot of my leadership style directly reflects the fantastic leader that I had as a platform manager and all of the skills that I learned from that person along the way. I've been truly lucky to work with some brilliant leaders who are absolute role models for me, and my style has adapted as I've worked with them. But on the flip side, I've also, as I mentioned earlier, worked with some people I personally consider really terrible leaders. And I think it's actually even more important to learn what doesn't resonate with you as a leader and what you can see not resonating with people around you when it comes to leadership, and make sure that those traits aren't something that makes their way into your own leadership toolkit. I think my leadership style has matured with time and experience and just continuing to grow in confidence. As a female leader, I think we have challenges that definitely, at least in my view, the male cohort don't do. And that's where people have a look at our leadership style and tend to sometimes think that it's too emotional, or that we're Yeah, effectively just being too emotional. That's probably a word that I've heard quite a lot as a female leader. And I think that is totally fine, and it comes back to authenticity. And I think leadership actually does need to be emotional and vulnerable. If you were a leader going through COVID-19, just completely blank-faced, robotic, I don't think that was ever going to resonate with the people that are stuck in their homes with two-year-olds running around without pants or anything like that. It is actually being that authentic person. And authenticity for me is I'm a mum of two, so you're going to get part of that in my leadership style. There is a little bit of maternal instinct in my leadership style because I am a mum. I think sometimes women face into, oh, you shouldn't be like that, or you shouldn't be emotional or anything like that. And I very much challenge that, because I think leaders come in all shapes and sizes, and you should be authentic. And if being emotional is part of your style, you can be emotional, and there is nothing wrong with being emotional. So leadership is evolving, and I think women are getting acknowledged a little bit more for that vulnerability, authenticity, and how it resonates with people around them. But it is still a challenge. And I think there have been people that I've worked with that they've kind of tapped down on that a little bit too much and not really had the confidence to stick with their vulnerability and their transparency and authenticity. And sometimes that can make you a little bit hard. And as I said earlier, that's not really something that I ever really wanted to kind of go into, to lose so much of myself that I was maintaining a work life and a home life or anything like that. So I've stuck to my guns along the way with some great support around me.
Yeah, I totally agree. The one word, you know, obviously the authenticity we've talked about, I totally agree with. But the one that you keep saying there is the vulnerability. And I think for leaders in the world today, and for everybody, I mean, making yourself vulnerable to others is not a bad thing. And I see so many people who refuse to be vulnerable, and it really does stifle their ability to connect with people, because people want to know that everybody's human.
Yes. Yeah, exactly right. I think it just comes across as really disingenuous at the end of the day. And if you're not vulnerable, ultimately, again, it comes down to trust. People are going to see right through you, and they can see that you're not being honest, and they're not going to trust you. And I think it really will start to stymie people's ability to grow into the leadership, because ultimately you are leading people. Yeah. At the end of the day, that's what we're there for. We're not there to manage, we're there to lead, and people need to trust you in order for you to be able to do that.
Yeah, for sure. So before I let you go, I've got one last question. So what can tech and engineering more specifically do to foster, you know, more diversity and to be more inclusive?
So there's a lot of evidence around diversity and inclusivity. I think for me, what resonates with me is that a lot of the evidence shows that one of the biggest barriers to girls, anyone from diverse backgrounds coming into STEM careers and choosing engineering as a profession is just the lack of visibility and lack of role models and being able to see other people doing it. And as a result, it just means that girls don't know what engineering careers look like, and they don't consider it as a realistic option. Even still, I think the other day I was reading some statistics in Australian high schools. Only about 23% of girls in engineering and technology subjects at the moment, and there's a very sharp drop off from high school enrollment into university enrollment in technology degrees still. And they show that girls' confidence in STEM subjects continue to fall as they get older, as they, you know, don't have to use technology in their day-to-day lives anymore. So for me, one of the most important things that we can do is introduce girls to the possibilities of engineering and technology a lot earlier. For me, I think if you have daughters or nieces or little girls in your life, encourage and support them from a really young age. When my family and friends have a baby, the first thing that I buy for them is a picture book featuring Ada Lovelace, who was a really kick-butt woman in the 1800s that wrote the first computer program that ever existed. And we need to be introducing figures like that to our kids from a very young age. We need to be encouraging them to experiment, be it through building Lego, which is engineering, or mining and crafting villages in Minecraft, which is, again, getting exposure to that kind of engineering, creativity, problem solving, or, you know, playing around with robotics and buying them cool little toys to be doing that. My parents did exactly that for me, right? They introduced me to computers from a young age, and being able to see what magic you could create with just a few lines of code opened the door to my whole career by the time I was 10 years old. And 26 years later, I love it just as much as I did then. So it really does make a difference introducing this very early on into our girls' lives.
Yeah, so important. Yeah. Emily, this has been fantastic. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for being on the show. I've learned a lot. I'm sure our audience has too.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
And that was Emily Cornock, Executive Manager for Core Data Platforms and Technology at Suncorp Group. I love meeting Emily. She's not a fan of stereotypes in technology, from black suits in the workplace to data teams in dark basements. I was also fascinated to hear her thoughts on female leadership and how she wasn't afraid to pivot on her career plan to get where she is today. Join us next time for more insights into careers and technology. Make sure you subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast, and make sure you never miss an episode.